CEO Business Mind, the radio show for entrepreneurs, small business owners, and professionals. Whether you own or run a business or would like to start one, this is the place for all the answers. Now, here's your host, Joe Morabito.
And this is Joe Morabito with CEO Business Mind. Welcome to my show. If you want to get to me, it's really easy. Just Google CEOBusinessMind.com. Look for the box that says subscribe. Follow the confirmation instructions. Type in your email address. Follow the confirmation instructions. And if you do that, you can take a look at our blog postings or my blog postings going back many years. They're informational. You can see some of the businesses that we're in. You can even check out some of the job openings that we have. And right now, as a matter of fact, we are hiring home resources coordinators. They can be anywhere in the country, but California, New York, or Illinois, bad laws there. We don't hire people in those states. And Alaska and Hawaii only for time zone reasons. But anywhere else in the country, we are hiring people. If you're interested in my political rantings, and they are rantings, you can go to nationalfreedomforum.com. Same process. Look for the box that says subscribe. Type in your email information. Follow the confirmation instructions. And if you do that, you'll see my political blog postings every day. If you want to know more about Paragon Home Resources, one of our businesses, just go to paragonhomeresources.com. Look for the line that says blog. Same process. Type in your email information in the box. Follow the confirmation instructions. And if you do that, you will get my Paragon Home Resources blog postings generally every day. And they're typically home-related. You might find them very interesting. If you've missed any of my past shows, you can go to TalkZone.com, and you'll find all of my podcasts hung there. So if you've missed a week and you want to catch up, you can just go there, and they're all there. So you can listen and enjoy them as you choose to. We always start the show with seeing the train coming, and this is really a good one. And it's now working from home, and many people are just not going back. You know, it's funny, when COVID hit in what, about February of 2020, and we had to shut down our offices, and all of a sudden, everybody had to work from home. And fortunately, we had purchased the technology, I don't know, 3 or 4 years earlier, that really allowed us to have employees work from anywhere. And so, obviously, we didn't have a choice. Our people had laptop computers. They were tied into our phone system just as though they were in one of our offices, and they were able to work from home. Well, about, 4 or 5 months into it, I emailed folks that had been working in our Dallas office, and I said, you know, we're sitting on this big office here, and does it make sense for us to keep it? Should we get some just small office to act as a base for all of you in Dallas? Or do you just want to continue working from home? And every single employee that works for us, every single one, said, no, we want to work from home. And one of the reasons for that, frankly, is the traffic in Dallas is terrible, like it is in many big cities. And you can waste 2 hours driving to and from work every day. And so now that our employees were able to work from home successfully, and because our management can have Zoom meetings anytime they want to, so if they want to have a team meeting, they can easily do it. It's not a big deal, even though people are calling in from different locations. So, you know, I think what's happening now is some companies are reopening their offices, and they're saying to their employees, you need to come back to work. And they're meaning at work, meaning at an office. And their employees are saying, no way, I'm not interested. And so now we're starting to see a lot of employees are resigning if, in fact, their employers will not allow them to work from home. And so that raises an interesting question that I think companies are going to have to rethink their employment strategy, because if they have a really valuable employee who's very successful, and that employee says, look, you know, I've been working from home now for a year. It hasn't impacted my ability to do my job. There's absolutely no reason for me to come into an office. You know, I'll do it occasionally if you want me to for a meeting or something. But otherwise, you know, you can do a Zoom meeting, and I'll be obviously happy to participate anytime you want me to. And so now, all of a sudden, employers are going to have to decide, do I accommodate this employee Or do I lose this employee? And I have to tell you, in our case, we've gone to a work-at-home mentality. And you know what? Here's what it's done for us. So we just did a recruitment for home resource coordinators. As I mentioned, we had job openings. And literally, they can work anywhere in the country, but California, New York, or New Jersey, or Alaska, or Hawaii, the last two for time zone reasons, the first three because they have crazy employment practice laws that I just don't want to deal with anymore. And so now what's happening is because people can work from home, we're attracting folks who live in second and third tier cities that may not have had an opportunity for this kind of work, you know, because they weren't in the major employment hubs around the country. So all of a sudden, there's a whole cadre of talent that's available to us that we didn't have before because, you know, we operated from California, from our office in Dallas. We had an office in Connecticut years ago. And so, but now, you know, anymore, because people can work from home, we can hire them anywhere in the country. And I think it's a wonderful opportunity for us from a talent perspective, because now it's all about the person. We don't care where they live, as long as they can do their job. And, you know, we monitor that the work is getting done, of course. And our managers have team meetings like they always did, only they do it by Zoom. And so I think companies are really going to have to decide if an employee says, thanks, but no thanks, either you let me work from home or I'm out of here, because I know I'll be able to go to work for some other company, presumably, maybe even a competitor, who's willing to let me work from home. And this beats my lifestyle better. It's better for my family. I don't have to spend 2 hours on the road getting to and from work. That's a waste of my time. I can put more time into my job. And, you know, as long as I meet whatever requirements of the job that you give me, then what do you care where I work from? Now, I will tell you, when we first did this, I was a little concerned because, you know, I had worked out of an office for years in my whole career, and I enjoyed the camaraderie that came with that. And, you know, sometimes the brainstorming. And I said to my managers, I said, okay, look, I have no problem with people working from home. But you're going to have to create an office environment. We do have employment requirements for people working from home that they have to sign. You know, they can't be doing childcare while they're working from home. You know, they can't have a distraction. They have to set up a workspace, even if it's a corner in some room somewhere. You know, they have to have some semblance of an office environment in order for them to be successful. And so we do have some rules if people are going to work from home. But I've said to my managers, look, just because people are working from home doesn't mean you shouldn't have a team meeting once a week, doesn't mean you shouldn't be talking to them perhaps every day, depending on, you know, what comes up. And, you know, create a virtual work environment by virtue of the way you manage them so that they feel like they're part of the company. And so that's the real issue, having employees feel like they're part of the company. But I really think this trend of working from home was accelerated by COVID. It was there all along because people have been working from home for a long time. But COVID accelerated the trend, and I just don't think it's going away. So companies are going to have to decide, are they going to accommodate it, or are they going to say, sorry? Now, I do know of an architectural firm in Phoenix. And they had the same thing happen. Employee was working from home. They wanted him to come back to work at the office. He said no, and they refused to accommodate him. So he ended up leaving the company and no doubt went to a competitor. And, you know, I guess that can happen if you're not going to accommodate the employee. But the real question is why? Why is it impossible for somebody to work from home other than maybe old thinking on behalf of management or the owners of the company in this particular case? But I know from our standpoint, it's worked out just fine. Our employees seem to be happy. They're productive. They get the job done. It costs me less money because I don't have to rent space to accommodate them. You know, and at the end of the day, I cut my overhead pretty dramatically by not having these people working in an office. So I think it's a win-win situation, but I think we're going to see a lot of these things happen where all of a sudden companies are saying, well, we've opened our offices back up. You have to come back to work. We expect you to come in into the office. I think maybe, just maybe, a compromise might be that the employee would come in one or two days a week if the employer is insistent, but maybe 3 days a week they're allowed to work from home. So maybe the middle of the week, maybe on Wednesday they come in, but they're able to work from home Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, or something like that. There seems to me there's a halfway point that can be used to accommodate people. But I know from our experience, by virtue of allowing people to work from home, the whole country becomes our talent pool. We're not stuck in any of the major employment centers where we might have had employees in the past. We're not stuck to that paradigm. We can look for people everywhere. And when we post a recruitment, we basically say any states but Alaska, Hawaii, New York, New Jersey, or what was the other one? Illinois. So it was no New York, no New Jersey, no California, no Alaska, no Hawaii. Those last two are really for time zone reasons. But otherwise, anywhere in the country is open to us. So now all of a sudden, we have a much deeper talent pool that we can draw from. And the reality is, from a salary perspective, if you're in California or you're in New York, you're going to have to pay more money because the cost of living is so much higher. But by employing people from second or third tier cities, it becomes a lot easier, in essence, to hire people at reasonable salaries, which is another way, to some degree, to contain costs, to increase profitability, while at the same time providing great service for your customers. So I love the fact that now the whole country is our oyster, so to speak, in terms of hiring people and the talent pool that we can draw from, because it gives us more flexibility, while at the same time we have happier employees who presumably can do their job from home. Naturally, when we get resumes, we do drug screening, we do criminal background checks. We do that anyway, no matter where the employee works. And then we reference the person. We interview them with a Zoom call so we can see them face to face. It's not like we're just talking to them over the phone. We get a sense of who they are and what they can do and what their background is. And hopefully no different than if they were going to work from one of our offices, we put them through the same process. We'll be back with more after this quick break.
Now, back to CEO Business Mind, the radio show for entrepreneurs, small business owners, and professionals, with Joe Morabito.
And this is Joe Morabito for the second segment of our show. I want to talk about Amazon for a few minutes. Amazon is probably the biggest winner from COVID of any company in the world, because while other companies were going out of business, while other bricks and mortar stores were closing because they couldn't open, during COVID, all of a sudden, anything you want to buy, literally anything you want to buy, you could order from Amazon. Now, you could do that before anyway, and certainly there was an impact on big box stores at malls. I kept saying what Wall Street did to Main Street, Amazon did to big box stores at these malls. And not only big box, but even the smaller stores. I saw an internet article recently that within 5 years, 25% of malls, unless they're reimagined, are going to close, because the big box stores that exist as anchors in many of those malls, they're going away. They're either going out of business, they're completely empty, they will be completely empty. They just can't compete with Amazon, because basically you could buy anything you want from Amazon, and I know my wife, we have Amazon Prime, which means we get free shipping. I don't know what she pays for that a year. But I would say, we probably have maybe three shipments come to us a week of one thing or another, because sometimes something will come up, and it can be even the most mundane thing. We're not necessarily talking about huge fashion items, although sometimes she does order some things that you might consider that, but it could be anything, could be light bulbs, could be you name it. We've ordered it from Amazon, and the beauty is, and it's amazing to me, it's at your doorstep in a day or two, as opposed to if you order a pair of shoes, let's say, directly from the manufacturer, it's going to take 2 to 3 weeks for them to get to you. And in most cases, in many cases, you're going to pay shipping costs. Somehow Amazon, which I do not understand, is able to get that same pair of shoes to you in a day or two. And because we have Amazon Prime, we don't pay shipping costs. And this is not meant to be an advertisement for Amazon, because there are aspects of Amazon that, frankly, I don't like. I think they have a monopoly in some sense, although you could argue that you could buy anything that they sell from anybody else. So I guess that would be their argument. But really what they're selling is not just the product necessarily, but the service. The fact that they can get an item to you in a day or two that the manufacturer can't get to you, sometimes in 2 or 3 weeks. For the life of me, I don't understand that. But all I can say is the manufacturer probably doesn't have a good back office system that would allow them to get the product to you in a day or two. Part of it, I think, is that Amazon has negotiated such incredible contracts with UPS and with the post office and with FedEx so that they spend very little comparatively on shipping. And I would think the manufacturer, because they don't have the volume that an Amazon has to spend more on shipping. So they're going to have to take the slowest boat they can take to get it to you, to get a decent shipping cost, because otherwise the shipping expense is going to be too high. And a lot of customers aren't going to want to pay that. But clearly Amazon, their stock is going through the roof. You know, they've put more nails in the coffin of big box stores, which, you know, in terms of competing with retail, I think retail needs to be reimagined. You know, one of the ideas that I had years ago when I was a kid working my way through school, selling ladies' shoes to movie stars in Beverly Hills, the store that I worked at was a Broadway department store. Today it's a Bloomingdale's. Well, anyways, most people don't realize that in these big box department stores, the only departments that are really profitable are cosmetics and ladies' shoes. Everything else is fluff, and in some cases, they lose money on the other items that they sell. So my idea was, instead of these huge stores that they have, that they would create small 10 to 20,000 square foot stores, and all they would sell in those stores are the things that are most profitable, which is ladies' shoes and cosmetics, and the rest would either be internet pickup, or you'd have a coffee or wine bar in the store. And sure enough, you know, I've been saying this now for a while. Sure enough, I read the other day that Bloomingdale's is creating a new concept, which is a 22,000 square foot store. They're going to call it Bloomies, because everybody calls Bloomingdale's Bloomies. They're going to call it Bloomies. And no doubt it's going to be cosmetics and ladies' shoes and a few other high margin items. And I think they said they're going to have a wine bar or a coffee bar or something like that in the store. And it's the kind of place that women in particular will want to go to, because they want to try on shoes and they want to touch and feel makeup before they buy it. Although I suppose you can order makeup and you can order shoes too, for that matter, from Amazon. But these are products in particular that women like to be physical about, touch them, see them, the whole deal. So I think that could be the future of a Macy's, you know, particularly Macy's, Bloomingdale's, maybe even a Nordy's. You know, here's the irony. Nordstrom's actually started out as a shoe store and then eventually grew into a department store. Well, who knows? Maybe Nordy's will, and they'll call it Nordy's, right? Instead of Bloomies, they'll call it Nordy's, because everybody refers to Nordstrom's as Nordy's. And so maybe Nordy is going to have these smaller stores. Maybe Dillard's is going to end up with these smaller stores. All I know is you're going to have a lot of malls in this country that Amazon basically puts out of business. And those malls have to be repurposed. And there's got to be other options or other more viable kinds of merchandising that's going to keep those malls going, because the notion of the anchor store is dying. It's just dying. And Amazon did that to them. You know, you don't need to go to Dillard's to buy whatever you want. You can buy it on Amazon. You don't need to go to Macy's. You don't need to go to Nordy's or to Bloomie's. You can buy whatever you want on Amazon. And Amazon has the most remarkable, and again, this is not a commercial for Amazon, because, you know, there are many aspects of Amazon that I don't like. But the reality is that they have the most remarkable distribution system in the world, in terms of their ability to get a product to you you know, within a day or two. It's pretty remarkable when you think about it, and at a pretty damn good price, because you're not necessarily paying top dollar if you buy it from Amazon. Usually you're getting it a little cheaper than you might get it even in a store. So I just think, you know, I watch this and you know, I've been in business over 40 years and I've seen a lot of trends come and go. You know, things come and go. Obviously, things like Starbucks that didn't exist in a big way 25 or more years ago. You know, if you think about all the things that have come along in the last 10, 15, 20 years that have changed retailing completely. And it's not over, folks. Wall Street closed down Main Street. You know, little towns used to have Main Street with all the stores on Main Street. And Walmarts came along in second and third tier cities and created the megastore that ultimately Main Street couldn't compete with. And before you knew it, Main Street stores disappeared. But then, you know, what Wall Street did to Main Street, Amazon has done to basically shopping malls, to bricks and mortar stores all over the country, maybe even all over the world. And so I think it's going to be interesting to see what's going to replace Amazon. Isn't that interesting? And frankly, if manufacturers could figure out a way to more efficiently sell directly to the consumer to cut Amazon out of the picture, then why do you have to go to an Amazon? You just go directly to the shoe manufacturer, directly to the dress manufacturer. But the problem is those companies that actually produce the product are not efficient at getting it to you. Amazon is efficient. If they figure out, and that's the manufacturer I'm talking about, if they figure out how to effectively get the product to you to bypass Amazon so that they can sell the product to you cheaper, then who knows? Maybe Amazon 10 years from now gets cut out of the picture. So, you know, business is forever changing. There's always better, faster, cheaper. And by the way, it can't just be better and faster. It has to be cheaper. That's the definition of innovation, whether it's a good or service, has to be better, faster, and cheaper to purchase something in order for it to be successful. If it's better and faster, but it costs twice as much, that isn't going to work. You have to have that cheaper component in there for it to finally give you something that's going to take off in the marketplace. We'll take a quick time out and be back for more CEO Business Mind.
Whether you're thinking of starting a business or just moving up the corporate ladder, this is the place for practical advice. CEO Business Mind with Joe Morabito.
And this is Joe Morabito, CEO Business Mind, for the second half of our show. Again, if you want to get to me, just Google CEOBusinessMind.com. Look for the box that says subscribe, type in your email information, follow the confirmation instructions, and you can take a look at my blog postings that are informational going back several years. You can see some of the businesses that we're in. You can even check out some of the job openings that we might have. As a matter of fact, right now, we're hiring home resource coordinators. They can be in any state, but Alaska and Hawaii for time zone reasons, California, New York, or New Jersey for crazy employment practice laws, but anywhere else in the country, it's a job working from home, working with our customers, and helping them to move anywhere in the United States. If you're interested in my political ramblings or rantings, and they are rantings, you can go to nationalfreedomforum.com. Same process. Put in your email information in the box, follow the confirmation instructions, and if you do that, you will get my political rantings every day. If you want to know more about Paragon Home Resources, one of our newest businesses, just go to paragonhomeresources.com. Look for the line that says blog. Same process. Put in your email information, follow the confirmation instructions, and if you do that, you can check out my blog postings. They're usually informational, related to home ownership, that sort of thing. If you miss any of my shows, just go to talkzone.com, and you can pick up all of my podcasts. They're hanging there. All right, so for the third segment of our show, I want to talk about, we touched on it a little bit, the future of big box bricks and mortar stores. That's the Macy's. That's the, well, the Sears has already gone out of business. I think they filed bankruptcy. JCPenney's has tried numerous concepts. I'm not so sure they're going to make it. You've got Bloomingdale's, you've got Nordstrom's, you've got Dillard's. There are a few other names, you know, across the country. Many of them have already been absorbed, have disappeared. Macy's has bought, you know, a number of different brands over the years to under the Federated Department Store. I think Macy's is actually Federated Department Stores. But the reality is we talked about what Amazon is doing to these stores. And from a cost standpoint, today, a couple things are happening. If you go into a Macy's or you go into one of these big box stores at a mall, you're going to find that they don't have enough help. They don't have any help. Sometimes they'll have one or two people working an entire floor, and it's sort of self-service, and you basically bring whatever it is you want to buy to a register. There's no one there usually to help you. One, they can't hire anybody these days at what they're willing to pay, and two, they're trying to cut their costs, and so they really have turned into a discount self-service operation. Now, that's not Nordstrom's, of course, because they pride themselves on service. It's probably not Dillard's either, from what I can tell. I enjoy Dillard's. I buy a lot of things at Dillard's. I like that store. And, of course, Bloomingdale's, of course, would be high-end. But, you know, when you look at Macy's, Sears are gone. I think they filed bankruptcy. I think most of those are closed. If they're not already closed, they will be closed. Penny's, I think, has filed bankruptcy. I'm not sure. If they haven't, they will. Penny's has never been able to find itself. You know, when I was a kid, my mother used to buy my underwear at Penny's, you know, white goods. And they were very well made at a good price. But Penny's has had a heck of a time. The same thing happened with Sears. They just didn't know who they were. They tried a lot of different things, all of which failed. Their management groups came and went. But the reality is, you know, when you look at that big box store, that's probably, let me think, they would be about, oh, maybe 200,000 square feet or maybe bigger in some cases. That's just not functional anymore. The only departments, for the most part, that make money in a department store are ladies' shoes and cosmetics. Everything else, or most everything else in a department store, is a money loser. And I think what you're going to see, and it's already happening, where Bloomingdale's said they're creating Bloomies, which is going to be a 22,000 square foot store that's only going to sell those things that are their high margin profitable items. Maybe they'll use it as a distribution point so that if you order something from a Bloomingdale's on the internet, you can either pick it up at one of these Bloomies that they're putting together, or you can have it delivered to you. But I really think maybe, just maybe, that the future of the big box stores, whether it's Macy's, whether it's Dillard's, some of the others, is going to be these much smaller stores that are only focused on certain items and everything else is internet pickup. Because I think this is where this is all going. They can't compete with Amazon. We talked about that. They just can't. And now COVID accelerated all these trends where when these stores were closed, you know, Amazon was open 24 hours a day. You could order anything you wanted. And if you had Amazon Prime, it was delivered at no cost to you. I mean, you paid, I don't know, $100 a year or whatever it is you pay. But then you didn't pay anything relative to delivery costs. And I know in our house, you know, my wife probably has 3 packages a week that are coming from Amazon. And, you know, more often than not, and sometimes the most mundane things, we're not just talking about clothes, you know, if you need light bulbs, if you need, I don't know, any number of things that you can buy on Amazon, it's really pretty remarkable. And, you know, it's funny, Amazon started as a bookstore. And they originally, I think, if I'm not mistaken, actually had bricks and mortar bookstores that failed. And then they started with internet books and they lost money for years and years and years. And then all of a sudden they figured out that they could sell everything retail over the internet. And once that happened, they became a powerhouse. And of course, today they make billions of dollars. They have probably the most remarkable distribution system in the world. You have to give them credit in that sense. But it's killing retail. It's killing big box stores and even small stores that just can't compete. in many instances, with the notion that you can go on the internet, you can shop the internet, you don't have to leave your house, you don't have to go anywhere, and the next day or a day later, things end up on your doorstep. And by the way, if it doesn't fit, you don't like it, you get the return label, and you can just send it back. They don't charge to pick it up. And so it's about as convenient as it could be. And, you know, COVID accelerated all of this. And as a result, Amazon, of course, their stock is going through the roof. They're doing exceptionally well, you know, from a stock perspective. But it's because they deliver, and forget about the product, they deliver a good service. The fact that you can have the product at your doorstep the next day or a day later. Usually it's 24-hour to 48-hour delivery in most cases. And it's remarkable. Anywhere in the country, the goods get delivered, and you can buy almost anything. Well, it's killing the big box stores, the Macy's, the Dillard's, the Nordstrom's, you know. And so those stores are going to have to adapt. They're going to have a different business model if they're going to be successful, or they're not going to be around. And in many cases, they're not around. The Sears are going out of business. The Penney's will be next. And that's because both of those brands were never able to develop a certain persona or image. They tried to be everything to everybody. And as a result, they became nothing to nobody. And so at the end of the day, you kind of have to have focus, discipline, and passion. It's true about anything in life to succeed, whether in life or in business. And so now these big box stores, I think they're going to be torn down. I think malls are going to be reimagined. I think there's going to have to be a whole different way of looking at what a mall is today. It's got to be an entertainment center. And I'm not talking about movies, because movies are dead. You can get movies on Netflix or whatever. You're not gonna go to a movie theater. In fact, one of the big guys in the movie industry, recently said it's not coming back. Movie theaters, those are all going to have to be repurposed at the end of the day, because people don't need to go to a movie anymore with these huge screen TV sets you have at home and the entertainment, systems that people have. So you can get the same experience, meaning it just drowns your eardrums, the same experience at home that you might get in a movie theater. You know, why spend $20 to go to a movie and then another $20 on popcorn and candy when you could see it at home, with Netflix or a CD or however you do it? You don't have to spend $100 taking your family to see a movie. You can see it at home, including first-rate movies on Amazon Prime, on Netflix, and other ways to get movies to your house. So at the end of the day, you know, when you look at these big box stores that I'm talking about that Amazon has destroyed, the question is, what's going to happen? I think eventually you're going to see residential housing tied to these shopping malls. It's something I'm starting to think about, and it's coming. We'll take a quick time out and be back for more CEO Business Mind.
Harnessing the entrepreneurial spirit of America. This is CEO Business Mind with Joe Morabito.
And this is Joe Morabito with CEO Business Mind for the fourth and final segment of our show. You know, I saw an internet article recently, and of course, this is no surprise. Baby boomers are turning 65 at the rate of 10,000 a day for the next 15 to 20 years. So by 2030, there will be over 74 million people in the United States who are over 65 years old. Half of them probably have nothing. Half of them, if they're lucky, are going to only have their Social Security to live on. The other half, if they're lucky, they've got a few bucks saved up in various investments, so they'll probably be okay. But the half that has nothing, which is going to be, what, about almost 35 million people, 30 million, 35 million or more, million people that have nothing and that are going to be trying to live on Social Security, one of two things or three things is going to happen. They're either going to be an incredible burden for their families financially, because they may not be able to care for themselves. They will be on Medicaid. Right now, 65% of people who are in nursing homes, assisted living facilities, it's paid for by the government under Medicaid. One of the big deals with Obamacare was just that, the expansion of Medicaid to pay for home care or nursing homes or assisted living for people who have nothing. And the way that works, potentially, is that when you only have Social Security to live on, when you've spent all of your money, assuming you had any money, then the government will take over and they will cover your expenses to live in an assisted living or nursing home. They give you $50 or $100 a month of your Social Security money. They take all the rest because the presumption is they're supporting you and you don't have any more money in the bank because you spent it all or wherever you might have had investments. You've used that all up. And so now you're in a nursing home or you're in assisted living or you have home care somehow helping. And so now all of a sudden the government in the next up to 2030 is going to be caring for 30 or 40 million people. And folks, it is god-awful expensive. I know. We had my mom in an assisted living community for 7 years, and it started out at about and this is years ago, so it's much more now. It started out at about $4,000 a month, and when she needed additional levels of care or service, it ended at $6,300 a month. Today, that same facility would probably start out at about $5,000 a month and end at about $10,000 a month for the level of care that she was getting at the time. So, you know, unless somebody has a lot of money or unless they have nursing home insurance or home care insurance, you know, who's going to pay for this? And for the half of the people who are going to be in this 74 million people, half of those people are only going to have Social Security and minimal savings, and they're going to need home care, or they're going to need to live in a senior community of one sort or another. And just so you know, when you think about senior communities, there's independent care. And that means basically that you have your own apartment or your own room, as the case may be, and you're getting 3 meals a day, but you're not getting any other care. And then you have assisted living, and that breaks into usually 3 or 4 levels, depending on, you know, the services that you may need. And with each level, the cost goes up. Then you finally have memory care, which is the most expensive. That is the lockdown unit. Well, actually, full-on-board skilled nursing home care is the most expensive. And so when you're in a skilled nursing home, you're completely bedridden. In some cases, you're being spoon-fed. You know, in some cases, people can't even eat by them for themselves. You're probably in diapers, and that's the most expensive level of care. So today, if you think about those graduations, it probably goes $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, $10,000, and then you end up in skilled nursing, and you're at probably $12,000 or more per month. And so, obviously, many people are not going to have that kind of money when the need comes on. For some people, they're going to live with family members because that's just what families do, but be an incredible burden for their family, because I know when people need serious levels of assisted living care, it becomes a 7-day-a-week, 24-hour-a-day process. And, you know, unless somebody is staying home to care for a loved one from working, you know, not working and staying home to care for a loved one, that's what you do. Now, wealthy people, they can afford to hire somebody full-time. They have in-house caregivers. Really wealthy people generally don't end up in senior living. They just hire full-time caregivers who live at their homes or at least come in every day and take care of them because they have the money to do that. Guys, that's the top 1%. That is not normal. That is not what you would typically see. So the reality is, even today, 65% of people who live in nursing homes or who live in assisted living, the government is paying it under Medicaid. But it's going to grow dramatically. The 74 million people, there's going to probably be 35 million people that are going to need the government to pick up the tab. This is billions and billions and billions of dollars every year. Our country is headed toward bankruptcy. We're already $30 trillion in debt. God only knows where we're going to end up before we have, you know, economic collapse. But these provisions are in the law today. And so as baby boomers age, and as this 74 million people, half of which have nothing to care for themselves, other than Social Security. Average Social Security today is about $1,300 a month. The maximum Social Security today is about $2,800 a month. And this assumes you retire at full retirement age, not at 62. Full retirement age today is about 67 to get the full benefit. So it really depends on when you were born. But the reality is half of these baby boomers are not going to have the money to care for themselves. They're not. So either their family members are going to have to take over the burden, or in many instances, I know when my mom was in assisted living for 7 years, when she died, she had $131,000 left that got distributed to her grandchildren. She paid for her own assisted living the whole time. Thank you, California real estate market, because the home that my parents bought in 1958 for $20,000 had appreciated to $600,000 by the time it was sold. And so my mother had her own money to pay for assisted living. But we had gotten to $131,000, and my brother said to me, so if mother runs out of money, my mother died at 94, if mother runs out of money, then I guess we're going to have to start paying. And my response to that was, well, you do realize that if mother runs out of money, the government is going to start paying for her assisted living. And for the taxes my brother and I have paid all these years, I wasn't feeling any guilt about that. I really wasn't, because we will have gone through all of my mother's money legitimately, paying for assisted living, and then the day would have come when all she had was her Social Security income and maybe a few other bucks, but otherwise all of her money would have been gone, and she would have qualified for Medicaid, probably staying in the exact same facility she was in, but in this case the government would have been paying for it. And my brother didn't realize that was the way it worked. I said, well, that's the way the law works. I mean, yes, we could pay for it if we choose to, but why would we if the government's going to pay for it legitimately? I mean, we didn't attempt to hide any money that my mother had or do anything. You know, a lot of families think they're going to take their parents' assets and hide them. If you try to do that, by the way, those assets have to have transferred 5 years before the need comes up. You can't do it the day the need is there. That's not how it works. They trace where the money went. But in any case, Medicaid is there. I'm just curious. Social Security is headed toward bankruptcy. Medicare is headed toward bankruptcy. I'd love to know where the money's going to come from to pay for, you know, all of this. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see how the government is going to finesse all of this while they continue to add new entitlements almost on a daily basis. The Biden administration and the Democrats in Congress keep proposing new entitlements, free college tuition, free this, free that, free everything. And the real question is, who in the heck's going to pay for it? Folks, there is not enough wealth in the entire United States today. If every dime was confiscated from everybody, not just the 1% or the very rich, but from everybody to cover our national $30 trillion national debt, and that is growing by the day. And so I'd love to know who's going to pay for all this. And these baby boomers that didn't plan well for themselves, and in some cases, in fairness, you know, they may not have been able to save any money because they were basically getting up, just getting by. I know how that works. My parents were lucky. They moved to California where real estate appreciated dramatically. That doesn't happen all over the country, or my mother wouldn't have had the money to pay for her assisted living for 7 years. We would have had to figure something out, or she would have been on Medicaid. But that's going to happen to many, many of these baby boomers. Probably 30 or 40 million of them are not going to have the money to pay for assisted living and or home care. And either their families are going to have to somehow cover it, or, you know, they're going to be on Medicaid. But if they are on Medicaid, I just want to know where the government is going to get the money. Because, again, if you took 100% of everything that everybody owns, the money's not there to cover it. That's it for now. I hope you come back next week for more CEO Business Minds.